Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 23rd of August, Anno Domini 2014, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. You'll notice Dave and I both made it back from one step ahead of the law last week.
It was a close one for me.
It was two steps because it was both of you.
What?
It was two steps because it was both of you.
You did a great job. You and Dennis did a great job.
It's so different being in the hot seat.
Yeah.
Yep.
If I can, I'd just like to jump in there just for a second and thank all the folks and that had such great wishes for my dad passing away that, you know, thank you very much. It was really great. You know, yeah, we miss him, but you know, all your kind words was greatly appreciated, and I thank all my listeners out there that took the time and you know made it special. Thanks.
That makes it very special. It really does. And before we get to the news, let us remind everybody that next Saturday, mark it on your calendar. Next Saturday is we are celebrating our 25th anniversary on the air. We'll be at the Lovin' Cup at Park Point near RIT. It's going to be a great, great time. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to seeing. We're going to see if we can get some of the old crowd out there from old shows, people who are on the air over the years. So if you're listening, plan on it next week. If you're part of the family, and you should be there. All right, to the news. Microsoft on Friday quietly recommended that customers uninstall one of last week's security updates after users reported that it crippled their computers with the infamous blue screen of death. The update, identified as MS-14-045 in Microsoft's numbering, one of nine released on patch Tuesday, August 12th, actually, was designed to fix three separate flaws, including one related to a font vulnerability and another in the Windows kernel, which is the heart of the operating system. Within hours of its release, however, users reported that MS-14-045 had generated a stop 0x50 error on some systems, mostly on Windows 7 PCs running the 64-bit version of the OS. Installation went smoothly. After rebooting, everything worked fine. But when I shut down my notebook and switched it on a little later, it came up with a blue screen with a stop 0x50 in Win32K sys. I could not even boot into safe mode as Windows failed to start, no matter which mode I chose, wrote a user identified it as XFormer to start a now very long thread on Microsoft's support discussion forum. As of Sunday, the thread contained nearly 380 messages, had been viewed almost 50,000 times. That's when I stopped counting because I was out of town. I didn't care anymore. That's a huge number, even for Microsoft support forums, and hints at the scope of the problem. Others on that same discussion thread pointed to different updates issued the same day that caused identical problems, including one meant to support the Russian ruble symbol. Some customers were able to retain control of their PCs by using System Restore to return the machine to a previous state, but only after they booted the computer using original install media. Microsoft is investigating behavior associated with the installation of this update and will update this bulletin when more information becomes available, the company said in the revised MS-14-045 update FAQ. Microsoft recommends that customers uninstall this update. As an added precaution, Microsoft has removed the download links to the 2982791 security update. Microsoft's advice, however, may not be of any help to those already afflicted. It told users, for example, to boot into safe mode, which many in the support thread said didn't work. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Microsoft update caused blue screen of death? And your choices are, yep, I got caught. Nope, I don't have 64-bit Windows 7. Windows XP forever. And Win what now? So far, 20 votes are in. 50% of you win what now? Nope, I don't have 64-bit Windows XP forever. And two people actually got caught. I'd love to hear from you. And, of course, I know you'll have more to say, so check out our forum. If you go down the right-hand side of the column, right-hand side of the page, you'll see fascinating stuff. Under that is the forums. And if you go into there, the second forum down is the poll discussion. And if you go into there, the very top one is Microsoft Update called Blue Screen of Death. There's already six posts in there. Let's keep on going. And that's 23 August 14. Microsoft Update caused Blue Screen of Death. And then you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Are we going to have to remind each other not to come here next Saturday?
I think so. I think we are.
I get in the car and it automatically just heads.
Yep. Yeah, no kidding.
So I got to go south instead of north now.
Yep. Yep. I start out, my problem is I start out exactly the same way.
Yep.
If I take the expressway, it's still 490 west. And then I can either make that left turn to head down to Spencerport, to Scottsville Road, or head on up to the right and go to Greece.
Yep. Like, Steve, I got to head south instead of heading west.
Yep.
Right.
It's like,
Well, you know what? If you get here and nobody else is here,
you'll remember.
You got to do some hustling.
Yeah. Yeah. It's.
You won't have any trouble. It's your week to not have to do the board.
That's right.
He forgot already.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's not that big a deal to him. I get it.
Well,
right.
You know, that's a funny thing. I was reflecting back on that because I was talking to somebody else that wanted, you know, was talking about getting into DJing and all that type of stuff and volunteering here. This is really hard. Well, for me now, it's no big deal. But I remember when we first started, things happening, and then when Rob, the first time he ever logged in and took over the computers, I was ready to have a heart attack. Because all of a sudden I seen on these four screens changing, and then I didn't know what the heck was going on because, oh, he forgot to tell me that he can log in and take over.
It pretty much got to the point where I did not recognize you without that look of panic on your face.
No, that's no lie. That is no lie. For the first month, I was panic-stricken, you know, just trying to remember everything and hitting the spots and getting stuff in.
We were so used to Rob running the show, we just expected him to keep running the show.
I know, look at that.
Yeah, for 20
lazy
years.
Lazy bugger.
Yeah, for 20-plus years, you know, he did it all.
That's right.
Jeez Louise.
But
I'll say back to that Microsoft issue.
Yeah.
They've updated their support documentation on the problem. Known issue number 3, Microsoft is investigating behavior which may cause system crashes.
Well, see, the problem is it only happens apparently it only happens on Windows 7 64-bit.
And it may be related
to the majority of them.
Yeah, okay.
There's a couple of other known issues about fonts too. And that was probably the ruble symbol. They added it to whatever font there was a problem in. So that's the whole problem with releasing patches is you might have 10,000 beta testers, but there's, 200-300 million people using Windows?
Right. Nobody has exactly the same setup that this got tested on.
Well, actually, that's something the EFF figured out with their Panopticlick.
Yeah.
Every computer is uniquely identifiable on the internet based on your screen resolution, the fonts you have installed, the plugins you have installed. So it's virtually impossible. They don't know it's you, but they know it's that computer again.
Well, even with the various laptops. I mean, you get a laptop and they're all the same. No, right in midstream, they could have a board change to make it a different enough. Just by one chip, and it could be the same type of chip, but just a different brand, and it's enough to throw the machine off. It doesn't act any different.
Or this week, we bought 100,000 Hitachi hard drives, and last week, we bought 100,000 Western Digital hard drives.
It's still the same hard drive, the same laptop, but the other physical stuff inside, the chips and everything else, even, say, something simple like, say, a sound chip. They could go from a version A to a version B. Doesn't really make any difference to us on the outside, but to Windows, it makes a big difference. They're two different things because Windows is so tied to all the hardware in there.
When I used to buy laptops for our faculty at RIT, we would go to the vendors and say, I have to have 65 absolutely identical laptops.
Mm.
Not
yeah,
similar,
close.
Because I want to clone, I want to create a CD.
Mm-hmm.
Or
a ghost image?
Actually, right, a ghost image on the network, mm-hmm. that is applicable to every one of those machines. So if I've got to do something with one of those machines, I can make it happen
without
having to remember, oh, Fred's machine was this and Mary's
machine was that. No, you don't need that hassle.
When one dies, you just swap it out and copy it back in and give it back to the
user.
Yeah,
with the ghost image, you can just sit there.
See, now that's called Chromebook.
Now it's a Chromebook. You aren't kidding.
Yeah, no, that's no lie.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's pretty cool. We should probably go to the phones.
You think?
Talk to Andy from Greece. Welcome, Andy, and thanks for holding. What's up?
I've been listening to this. It's very interesting. On your issue of the week, before I get to my question, I have a Win 7 Pro and a 64-bit and a Win 8 Pro 64-bit, and neither of them had a problem.
Interesting.
So hopefully there's a difference between regular and pro. But so far, knock on wood, I haven't had a problem.
Excellent. Good for
now,
you. Congratulations.
Yes, I'm breathing a deep sigh of relief.
Yep.
Question this week. You've been, with all the craziness with people getting into sites and doing things and that they're not supposed to, you've been advocating the use of a password manager.
Yep.
And you've had a couple that you've talked about. Do some splaining, Lucy. How is that a good deal? If somebody gets into your computer, what keeps them from getting into your password file and getting all your passwords?
Well, two things. One is the password that you've put on the password file, and the second thing is the password you've put on at boot up.
So, but in general, physical access to the computer, pretty much all bets are off.
Well, yes and no. If you pick something like KeePass, KeePass or KeyPass, actually, either one, that encrypts the data on the hard drive. So unencrypting it is hard because it's a very good encryption mechanism. So your data are as secure as anything else that wouldn't be... that anybody else could get at on your machine. I mean, they're not gonna get at that.
Not that easy.
Easily. The second thing is, you should have, of course, a password when your machine boots up. It should boot up to a password prompt. I know everybody. You know, God forbid they have to take an extra 4 seconds to boot up their machine. Holy cow!
Yeah.
What a terrible onus that
inconvenience.
Is. But that also protects your machine, making it more difficult for somebody to actually get into the machine. At that point, they'd have to take out the hard drive in order to be able to get at that file. And particularly if you've set up your machine properly, which is make sure it boots from the hard drive first. That way they can't get in with a CD or a USB. Secondly, put a lock, a password, mm-hmm. on your BIOS. And third, put a password
on the boot up
on the boot up sequence, so that
and again keep,
it boots up to a password, not
yeah. And yeah. again, don't keep 1, 2, 3, 4 or you know simple stuff.
That's make the same password I have in my luggage.
Make it unique. Again, yeah. So many folks, again, like you were saying, though, Nick, folks get so lazy, inconvenience, you know, they can't be bothered with it. They'll just put a 1 in there and then hit enter and it goes.
Well, I don't have anything anyone would want to steal.
Okay.
But,
I mean, you know, I built the computers this year and because it's a desktop, doesn't go anywhere. It's not like a laptop where I'm portable or anything else and it's just us in the house. I didn't put on a password at logup just because it didn't seem necessary.
You still could
Does
have.
Anybody ever come into your home?
Yeah, you could have invited guests that come in and I just want to check my mail and happen to see something, or uninvited guests who steal the computer.
Yeah,
well, there's that too.
Yeah.
But what I've done in the past is I have different passwords that are letter number combinations that make sense based on my personal interests. so that I can remember them. And I grouped them. Like, one's used for social media, one's used for job search sites, one's used for bill paying, and a different one for banking.
So you use, so let me interpret that in plain English. You have patterns that if someone knows you, they could guess.
Not really.
Yeah, you'd be surprised.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't mean to be rude about it, but yeah, really.
Yeah, I went into a guy's office, and he had pictures of Porsches all over the place. I sat down because he was in there and had to get it on his computer. Gee, I typed in Porsche. I was in. Didn't take much, but like you say, if people pay attention and really know you, I mean really know you, they can pretty much guess.
Yeah. But the reality is passwords should be long. They should be complex. One of the nice things, you should have a password that's a minimum of 14 characters. What's lovely about pass keepers, like KeePass or LastPass, they will generate the passwords for you.
64-bit passwords, which are
zillion
characters.
But
yeah.
You don't care because it's going to put them in for you.
Yep.
LastPass will actually type it in for you. So
okay, I'm sorry. What was the one? You had KeePass, and what was the one you just mentioned?
LastPass.
I'm sorry?
LastPass. L-A-S. The last password you'll ever need to know.
Is the one password you put in your password manager.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The password you have to unlock the password manager with is the last password you have to know, so they call the product LastPass.
Okay.
And what happens is you can say when you go to a new site, LastPass will pop up and say you want to create a password for the site. You say yes, and you can tell it, I want it to be, 25 characters long. I want it to be numbers, letters, uppercase, lowercase, symbols, sounds, pictures. Not sounds and pictures, but you know what I mean. Make it as complex as you want, and then bang, it will remember that.
What are the limits on what websites, bill paying websites and banking websites will take?
That's something we'll talk about after the break.
Yeah, but we got to take a quick stay on the line.
Okay.
We got to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Andy, and you. It's 21 minutes after the hour. Soundbites. Member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick French.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 26 minutes after the hour, we still have Andy from Greece on the line. Andy, you were asking us how long a password can be?
Well, you had said that with 64-bit software, you can have very long passwords. My immediate thought was, okay, websites aren't known for being real accommodating for, newest, latest, greatest. So how do you know how big it should be or what the website will, if I go in and say, okay, give me a 64-bit password, how do I know the website will take it?
You don't. There's two things. Theoretically, they will tell you how long a password can be.
Okay.
Most sites nowadays take pretty long passwords. But 64-bit doesn't mean you've got 64 characters in the password. You can set the length. So if you want it to be 14, 18, 24, most sites will take those.
Okay.
And you want it to be more than, I think it's 17 now. I'd have to look that up.
Which, before it gets too easily guessable to brute force. And that's what I mentioned earlier about if someone has physical access to your computer, they can run a brute force password cracker and just let it run as long as they want.
Let me tell you about Rainbow Tables.
Yep.
Rainbow Table is a pre-computed table that when you save your password in Windows, what it saves is something called a hash. Then when you type in the password again, it recreates that hash with a special algorithm and then checks the two hashes against each other. The chances are billions to one that you will get the same hash from two passwords. The problem is Microsoft hasn't really changed the algorithm in approximately ever. So everybody knows the algorithm, and there are companies that do nothing but put out tables of every conceivable combination of every letter, and I think they're up to 17 at this time. So if your password is less than 17 characters and you let your machine boot from the CD first, then somebody could run the Rainbow Table CD on your machine and crack it within seconds.
And the other half of that is all the leaked passwords that have gone out. There's 100 million leaked passwords that the bad guys know about. The good guys have done statistical analysis on them to find the most common passwords and the most used passwords. So the bad guys try those common passwords in their brute force attacks. And the sneaky thing, we think sneaky things about putting an at sign for a 2 and putting a 3 for an E. The bad guys know all about that, too, so they don't help anymore. So it's a truly random password is your best
defense.
Thank you. Yeah. And Nick was saying LastPass and KeePass, they have versions for Mac, Windows, Unix, iOS. Apple devices have the Safari keychain built in. For all of Apple devices, we'll recommend passwords for you and we'll manage your passwords for you across Apple devices. So if you stay in the Apple ecosystem, it's all built in.
Right.
But
well,
yeah,
and
you can
think about something like LastPass.
Yeah.
No matter what your device is, if you've got a tablet or you've got a laptop, you've got a desktop, and they cross operating systems where you don't have Windows, don't have a Mac, then LastPass does much the same thing.
Yep.
All right.
Okay. One last thing, gentlemen.
Quickly.
Just so you know, during the last break, you had an open mic. I could hear Dave and Nick having a conversation. Right. I couldn't hear it clearly, but I could hear it.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Yep. Yeah, I got to be careful of that.
The red lights were off, I thought.
What?
I thought all the red lights were off.
I thought so, too. That's very weird.
Maybe there's another mic. Wait, where's my... Ooh, how about my broadcaster? Where's the broadcaster?
Maybe that was it.
No, that's using the iMic. Sometimes it gets switched to my ambient mic.
Right. No, I know it was off because I saw it come on when Dave was... starting up again. So I don't know what that was, but thank you, Andy. It's good to know. We'll check more carefully next time, and hopefully we'll be all right.
That's poor Dave with his too many buttons on the board.
That's right. Dave really does have a tough thing he has to do. Who? Where's this?
X. Yeah, it's Dick from XPON. Yeah, that's how he.
XPON. All right, our next caller is Dick from somewhere in Pennsylvania.
Yes. Dick, how do you pronounce that?
Yes, hello.
Hi, where are you calling from?
Exton, E-X-T-O-N, Pennsylvania.
Oh, yeah, okay, what's up?
Okay, I've been using the Chromebook for about 6 months, and I love it. It's been working great. I just ran into my first problem that I can't figure out. I go to the home page. It used to come up with the Google bar in the center, and then like 8 panels below it, which usually did the most popular things I clicked on.
Sure.
Last week, I turned the computer on, and now it comes up with this Ask toolbar and 10 icons below it. And I went to the settings, and I can't get it to go back to the original home page. How do I do it?
On a Chromebook? Wow. Okay. What you need to do, and you may have looked here, but let's do this together anyway. The 3 bars in the upper right corner that brings down the menu?
Yeah.
Go into settings.
Okay, hold on. Settings, yep.
Go into extensions.
Okay, hold on. Extensions. Where's extensions?
On the left, you should see history, extension, settings.
Wait a minute, I clicked on settings. I should not have clicked on settings?
You should have. No, yes, you should have clicked on settings. From the drop-down menu,
right,
that opens up a thing that says Chrome OS.
Oh, extensions. I'm sorry, yes.
There you go. Click on extensions. Now look through that and see if you find the Ask
toolbar.
Toolbar,
okay.
Somewhere along the way, some website you went to snuck the Ask toolbar into your computer.
Yeah.
And another thing I've been having is I keep getting a pop-up from Verizon, fills the whole page. It says a survey they want to take. And I don't really believe it's from Verizon, to be quite honest.
That might be also from the Ask toolbar, because the other thing it does is gives you more ads. a lot of times with these sites, I had like four computers this week got infected with these types of things. You'll get a an ad or window will show up on screen and say, would you like to optimize your web searching, or would you might like to make your browser faster? And people go, oh, yeah, sure I would. And it installs toolbars.
Right.
It's better for them. It's not better for you.
Better for you, right.
I never click on those things, but I can't find anything in the extension under Ask at all.
Well, are you seeing things in there that you did not install?
Let's make sure. Spotify sound. Selecting speed radio. I don't see anything that looks unfamiliar at all.
Is there another section for toolbars?
Well, yeah, if you go up to, again, in that three-bar menu thing.
Yeah.
Under, is it more tools?
Okay, yeah, more tools. I see that.
You can get
okay,
to extensions.
Okay, I clicked on that.
You can also get to extensions from there. You got to look more carefully. We can't wait for you to do that, but you got to look more carefully. The problem is somewhere there is that toolbar on your system.
And, okay.
I can't honestly.
How about if I just take and disable all the extensions and see what happens? Then I can put them back one at a time.
That's the place to start. Absolutely.
But yeah, because it may not have come from Ask. It may have come from something else.
Yes.
Right.
Yep. That was the biggest. That was the answer to the one question a couple of weeks ago when you guys weren't here. Foxit PDF Reader is starting to bundle Ask Toolbar as a way to pay for the free Foxit Reader, and I had forgotten that. And somebody asked about why we weren't talking about Foxit anymore, and because they throw the Ask Toolbar in there to help pay for the free software.
Okay, that's what I'll do. I'll disable them all and see what happens, and then I'll try and enable one at a time and see what happens there.
Yep. Perfect.
Hey, thanks for your help. I really appreciate it. You guys have been great. I listen to you every week, and it's great.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. So to the web server, that's just Chrome OS, or Chrome browser. It doesn't actually care that it's on a Chromebook? Or
no, it's the plain, it's the real Chrome browser, so, which is why everything that works on your desktop works in the Chromebook.
So extensions and toolbars that are written for Chrome
work
on any OS that Chrome is running on. All right.
Yeah, it's the
which is good, but it's bad when the bad guys do it too.
Right. But the basic idea is they're actually written for Chrome.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting thing. You found a.
I found a bunch of them on removing it from Chrome, but they all tell them to go to the same place. And then and the other thing that you may need to do is change your default homepage, because the Ask toolbar may have changed it to Ask.
Right.
But I'll post this one. There's a few of them, and it's talking about the Chrome browser, but that's the same on all the OSs.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Ed. What's up?
Hi, gentlemen. Good morning. I want to ask a question. We use at work a Windows 7, and I have a Dell. There's a when you go to like the personalization, and then there's an option called. Color calibration, and the premise is trying to get the screen a little bit lighter or darker. There's you click through the color calibration, and you come to an area called the gamma, and you try to get the lighter dark section to get the little beads right where they're they look, and then you go to the next one. And the slider does that. There's a little slider that goes lighter or darker.
Right.
My question is, then when you click through everything and say finish, and you go back, for some reason it won't hold the slider where you put it. It defaults to something else. And I don't know if there's another step that I'm missing. I tried this a couple of times, and if you want it darker, you got to go back to the whole thing all over again. And there's got to be a way where it stays at that slider, because the next thing that comes up is do you want to change the fonts? And I say no, and click through no, go to finish, and it'll give you two small inset windows, previous calibration, current calibration, and the current one looks nice and dark, which you want, I want. So I click finish, go back, and about maybe 20 minutes later, it's right back to where it was before lighter. And I don't know if there's a step that's, I mean, it's pretty obvious what you're supposed to do,
right.
But I don't know if there's something I'm doing wrong or maybe the monitor's bad.
Well, it probably isn't the monitor. What it probably is that some Dell tool, and by that I mean software as opposed to the people who sold it to you, Some Dell tool is recalibrating on the fly. Often enough, particularly when you get a system from a big store like Dell, they fill it with a lot of what we call bloatware, just junk that they've added to your machine. And I know that Dell does a whole lot of weird stuff in the background.
There's the Dell Display Manager.
There you go.
DDM application. So Dell is trying to set the display the way they want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And now if you go into the DDM monitor, you should see under Start and Programs, you should see a Dell folder. And in there, you will probably find this DDM Manager. And maybe through there you can set the thing the way you want it, as opposed to doing it through Windows, since Dell is rechanging it again.
So you said that was a DDM monitor?
Is that what it was called, DDM monitor?
It's the actual application file name. Well, DDM setup.exe, 1244.exe was the latest
Dell
version.
Dell Display Manager. So DDM.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thanks.
Take care now.
Quick break, back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Tim from Webster, New York on the line. Welcome, Tim. What's up?
Yeah, hi, guys. There was an interesting weather report there.
Why, what happened?
That little promo before it. Anyways, I'll tell you quickly what I do, then I'll ask a question about it regarding the passwords. I'm really paranoid about my passwords, so the way I store them is either on a thumb drive or on paper. And what I'll often do is I'll use abbreviations for what they go to. I won't list the domain of the email because I know what I use. Like if it's Gmail, I just won't list it. And then what I do is I do use 18 character plus passwords, but I won't write in a really simple word that I'll use either before or after, like Porsche. Before and or after, and that's one way that I'm hoping will deter hacks even more. So what I'm wondering is, for things like KeePass, because I've never used that and it sounds really awesome, is there a way that I can use that in conjunction with a thumb drive so that I can keep it off my hard drive?
Yes, you can actually save the KeePass file, the encrypted KeePass file, to a thumb drive, to a network drive, to anywhere you want, really.
Some people will save it to a cloud drive like Dropbox or Google Drive. Then they can access that same encrypted. So it's encrypted before it goes on the internet.
Right.
They can access that same password store on all of their devices.
Right.
Oh, okay. But this is something that does the password for you, if I understand. So would you be able to input that Porsche at the beginning or the end?
Yes, you can do anything you want. KeePass doesn't actually type it in. LastPass does that.
Okay.
What KeePass does is you can bring it up and then do a Control-C, Control-V thing.
Okay.
But in either case, it shows you that password, and then you can alter it if you want to.
Excellent. So, I mean, don't you think that's a really good idea to just add that simple word at the beginning or the end?
It depends on what your password is. Honestly, if your password is generated through the program, it's already so complex that adding a real word at the beginning or end just gives hackers a hint as to what the hash is for that algorithm.
Oh, it does.
Yeah.
Okay.
If they can figure out that real word, they're a lot closer to home free.
Okay. I didn't realize that that's how the hack process worked.
Yeah.
Okay. Then the last question I have, and then I'll hang up, is it looks like Malwarebytes is a little different, so I was hoping you guys could comment on that. And thanks for all that you do.
Thank you. Dave, have you seen a difference in it lately?
Yeah, they've updated some of it, and but it's still a great product, works great, and I still, like we've said countless times, you know, yeah, it's free. As is Super Anti-Spyware, which we recommend.
Looks like they changed their icon, too.
It's they changed it all around a little bit.
A samurai robot attacking malware?
It's a Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
It's a cute little thing, but, you know, yeah, they're always staying up to date, and that's why I encourage folks, you know, again, pay for it.
Yep.
Pay for it. Yep. Pay for it. Pay for it.
Yep. But to Tim's point, yeah, it's cosmetically a little different.
Yes, a little different, but still does the same great job.
It's the same thing.
Like everything else. They're staying on top of things. So don't be surprised, folks, when they sit there and tell you. As long as you're going directly to their site, not being, you know, transferred to some other goofy site, and you go right into malware, you know.
Malwarebytes.org,
and you're there, you're safe.
They've simplified the main screen a little bit more, probably for novice users because so many people are running it now.
Right.
There's still so the simple screen says threat scan. Okay, I'll do that. Or you can go into the deeper scan, and there's a zillion options for you.
Right. Right.
So if you want those zillion options, they're under there. If you just want to scan for threats, that's there too.
Just hit the button. Boom. Yep. Done. You're done. It is a terrific product, and I'm glad to see that they've updated it because that means they're paying attention to it, and that means it's still up to date.
I have seen it run a lot faster than it used to.
Yeah.
The first time I tried the new version, I expected it to take hours like it usually does, and I came back like an hour later and it said it was done.
You
can't be done already.
They're doing a good job.
They've done a real nice job with it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dennis. What's up?
Well, I noticed that, Nick, your mic is sometimes it sounds like you're talking right into the mic, and sometimes it sounds like somebody else's mic is picking you up. I'm not sure if that's a mic problem or whether it's just you.
I'm sure it's me.
Yeah.
It's because you sound, at times you sound like you're talking in the background.
Yeah, we think it's something in
I made a couple of adjustments, and we'll see how this goes.
Yeah, so leave your mic open, Dave, and now Nick, you talk.
Now, if I talk over here.
Yeah, that sounds like he's talking. You sounds like you're talking
you're
in
off
the background
mic.
Now. Yeah, I noticed that when Dave turns his mic on, you go to background, and when he turns it off, you go to, comes back.
Right. My problem is I have a big mouth. I spent 20 years as a professional actor, and I still project out to that 200th row. And I know I don't need to do that in radio, so I try to remember to draw it back.
Because,
but then I get excited and I get interested in what's going on, and I start to project again, and all of a sudden I'm louder, and now I'm probably hitting all three mics at some point.
And we're separated. My mic to yours is what, maybe 5 foot?
Yeah, isn't that a lot of?
Yeah, there's not a lot of room in the studio. You know, it's
and they're directional, but
there's that technical issue of when Dave. When Dave has his mic open, yours is not. You go to background immediately.
Right. There's a.
Just was wondering.
Thanks. No, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, we are aware of it, and we're trying to figure out what's happening. And it's only our show, partly because we're the only talk show.
Right. Right. And there's a different dynamic when we have the mic open to the phone line. As opposed to when, for example, Al and Ray are just talking to each other.
Yep.
It's a very different set of dynamics all the way around. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ron from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Ron. What's up?
Hi, guys. I'm calling on behalf of somebody else. We have a laptop with Windows 7 and an iPad with 7. And we have Skype, and Skype is shutting down on the laptop, but it does not shut down on the iPad when you turn it off. And we're trying to figure it out because it's constantly showing a check mark that Skype is being used all the time. We can't shut it down. Is there any way we can, shut Skype down, or is that a Skype problem?
Well, it's a Skype issue. Skype is assuming you want it to run so that you can receive phone calls. There is a preference. I don't have Skype on my iPad at the moment, but there is a preference for you to tell Skype to shut down in the background. So that's probably in the settings app under Skype.
So you look under preferences then?
In the settings app on Skype, on the iPad.
Okay.
In settings under Skype, there's probably a setting to turn off background processing. That also doesn't drain your battery as fast because Skype isn't back there waiting for a call.
Yeah, the thing is that when you get on the iPad to use Skype, it asks you to sign in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, which indicates, you know, somehow something's shutting down, but it doesn't show shutting down.
Well, that part of that's a function of the iPad. No program is ever shut down because it's always waiting for you to go back into it if you want to. So that makes getting back into the program faster. You can manually quit programs by double-tapping the home button, which takes you into the program switcher, so you can switch between programs. And if you swipe up on any of the program windows, then that actually does quit that program. So a lot of people don't realize that, in essence, programs never quit on the iPad. So you go into that task switcher, and every program you've ever run is still running.
Yeah.
And it might take a long time to turn them all off.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll check that one out then. All right. Thanks for your help.
Sure.
All righty. Thanks.
But I'm pretty sure I remember from my Skype testing that that in the Settings app is a setting so that Skype does not run in the background, does not wait for phone calls, and doesn't
drain
your battery.
Also, I believe there's a setting that says don't start when Windows start, or when you turn on the iPad, don't start.
No.
No?
No, any program. Maybe. That's when you reboot.
No, I mean don't log in. I didn't mean start. I meant don't log in.
Well, yeah, if you log out of Skype, then, yeah, there's a setting where it won't remember you and won't automatically log back in.
Right. All right, our next caller is Jim from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's up?
Oh, hi, guys. I have an old phone, and the battery's near the end of its life, and I was thinking of getting a smartphone, a no-plan deal, no-contract deal, and I wanted to get an iPhone, and Virgin Mobile has a deal with an iPhone at a little bit of a discount, but the coverage, it looks like it's only fair, and I wonder if that would work for me.
Well, it depends on where you go. However, one of the news items I hadn't gotten to yet is that on Thursday, Sprint announced a new $60 unlimited plan in its latest bid to reverse their decline.
Yes, since AT&T and Verizon are so big, you know, Sprint and T-Mobile, and then some of the second tier carriers like Cricket and TracFone and some of the other ones, they're competing on price. But because they're smaller carriers, their coverage is frequently smaller. I have T-Mobile. My wife has Virgin, and she doesn't have too bad a time with it. It works pretty much everywhere she needs it to.
Oh, okay, then my other question, if I may, is that at Walmart I can get a straight talk plan, Samsung Galaxy S4, and how does that phone sound to you? And it's on a T-Mobile network.
The Samsung Galaxy is a very popular phone. You've got the 5.
I've got
now?
The 5. Yeah. I love it. I have friends who have 4s. They love them until they see the 5.
Well, and that's one way that places like Walmart sells the phone cheaper because it's an older model.
Uh-huh. Right.
So
it's still a very good phone. You should go in and to any one of a million places nowadays and look at one, you know, hold it in your hand, figure out what it is and how it works and what you want from it. It has some obvious differences from the iPhone because it's from a different company. But you may like some of the features. You may like some of the things that you don't get in the iPhone, like a replaceable battery and stuff like that. But you should... The only way to make a decision about a phone is to hold it in your hand and play with it.
I have, now what was I going to say? I have a Mac, an iPad, and an iMac and stuff, and I really wanted to try to get that iPhone if I could. So you think you think that Virgin Mobile would work out for me? I don't do a lot of, I'm unable to do texting and all that with the phone I have, so I probably won't be doing a lot of texting and a lot of talking. So do you think that might work for me?
I suspect it will. If you're already in the Apple ecosystem, buying an iPhone is a very good idea. And if you're looking for coverage, I really have to tell you, go look at the maps on their website, because unfortunately, I don't know where you go, right? So if you were to look at the map, and you can check on Virgin's website, you can actually check the coverage in your area. You know, you put in your zip code or whatever it is you put in, and then you can zoom in on your area and see how much 4G, how much 3G, all of that stuff is available, and you can zoom right in.
They show fair coverage. Is that good enough, do you think?
Well, fair coverage means sometimes you get 4G, sometimes you get 3G, but you almost always have actual coverage of some sort. And the only time 4G versus 3G really matters to you is when you're doing data, because then 4G is faster. But when you're texting or talking, it doesn't matter.
Well, I really appreciate your program, guys. Thank you very much.
We appreciate that. Thank you very much. It's very hard to figure out what phone you want. Well, we're going to take a quick break, a slightly longer break. We seem to have wasted an entire hour of your life, and you seem to be okay with that, so we'll do it again. On the other side of these important messages and announcements. And we'll be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. And we'll be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Before we get back to the phones, let me just remind you that next week, from noon to 2, we will be live at Love and Cup in Park Point near RIT. It's our 25th anniversary show. I'm personally looking forward to it. I love parties, and I hope this is a big one. I want that place busting at the seams.
This is longer than my first divorce, my first marriage. No, we'd love to see all our listeners. You know, I mean, we've had you know who would be really funny to show up? Who do you always mention?
Francis.
Yes. We never found out who the heck Frances is.
I don't know who she is, but we'd love to.
Or could be a guy.
No, it was Frances with
A Y?
An E.
Why? Frances with a Y.
Francis.
A silent Y.
You want to really get some funny looks from people? Well, say something like, the E is silent, as in knife.
Yeah.
What?
Okay.
Yes, there is an E in knife.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's next Sunday. I'm really
Saturday.
Saturday. Next Saturday.
Now remember, you got to turn right when you leave your house to head down south, not north.
Right. Exactly. And anybody who actually shows up on Sunday, I'm sorry, you're a day late. We'll all be there Saturday, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. And it's our 25th anniversary. Let's make it a party. Let's make it a blowout. But for now, we'll go back to the phones and talk to Irwin from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Irwin. What's up?
Okay. I have a friend who has an iPad and loves it all the time, takes it with her when she travels. She has the app on it for reading the DNC while she's traveling. She can read the DNC easily, but when she reads an article she really loves, she doesn't know how to mail it to her sister in New York.
Some apps may not let you do that. I don't know the DNC app itself, but there's a general iOS icon. It's a square with an arrow pointing out of it, or on the older iOSs, it was kind of a thick arrow pointing out, and that's basically the icon that says, I want to share whatever I'm on with somebody. And you can share the page you're on as an email, as an iMessage. You can send it to print, but the app itself has to support that feature.
And if
I looked at it when she was showing it to me, and I was looking for that symbol, it does not appear. So is she just out of luck?
She may just be out of luck. It's up to the people who created the app to decide to do that.
I'll tell her to complain to the DNC.
Yep. There you go.
Another thing you can try is just tap and hold on the center of the window, and there may be a save icon that will let you save that page, and then you can mail that page separately.
I will try it next time I see her. Thank you, Steve.
Yep.
Thanks.
Bye now.
It's interesting because you'd think you'd think the newspaper would want you to share stories so other people would read the newspaper too.
Yes. Yes. I think it's the DNC, of course, near and dear to my heart. I have a column in the paper.
Yep.
Shameless plug for me. So I hope everybody spends all their time reading the paper. All right.
Customer come in this week. They were buying a computer for their kid going off to school, and so what are you studying? And she said publishing. And oh, you poor thing.
Yeah.
I hope you mean internet publishing, because most of the other publishing is dying.
Well, now publishing is happening everywhere, right?
Yep.
I mean, ebooks need publishers.
Yep.
Need people who at least can format into the EPUB format or the Mobi format or whatever it is. And it's a whole new world out there for that stuff.
Expanding what publishing means. It's not just, print publishing anymore.
Right, right, right. All right, you know what? Let's go back to the phones. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I just went to the DNC page on the App Store, and there's a share button. It's the square with the arrow pointing out of it.
There you go.
So maybe they just missed it.
Yeah, it might be. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Jack from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jack. What's up?
Hi. Well, maybe 3 days ago, Wednesday, I bought what is purported to be the best golf GPS app out there. I spent $30, and it bites the big one. So I'm calling to see, can you get money back for an app you bought?
What operating system is this on?
Oh, you just exceeded my level of expertise.
What device are you using the app on?
It's on my iPhone.
Okay.
There is a procedure. I got to find it again. It's tricky to get a refund for an app. That's one of the reasons why apps have become so cheap, is that $1, $2, if it doesn't work, too bad. And you don't mind missing it. But a $30 app.
Mm-hmm. Right. One of the things is, of course, I have the Google Play market, so it might be different for the Apple Store, but on Google you have a set amount of time you can return the app with no questions asked.
Okay.
But it's not a terribly long amount of time. Normally you download something, you play with it, within 10 minutes whether or not you're going to love it. And so you can easily then return it that way, but if it's 3 days, I don't know what I don't know how it works on a Mac.
90 days, it looks like, is the Mac return policy. Basically, you go into iTunes on your computer, log into your account, and look at your history, and there's a report a problem button, And you can report the problem with that app and request a refund is one of the options.
Oh, fine. Okay. Wonderful.
Alrighty. And then be prepared to wait.
All right. Okay. Sounds good.
Okay.
Sure. Thanks very much.
Yep.
Yeah, it's interesting that, that some apps still cost more. We ended up calling it the race to the bottom, that, that these 99-cent apps, you know, $1.99, that, that a game that would sell on the console for $60, people won't pay $4.99 for it in the App Store. But now the whole freemium mess is you get the game for free, and you'll spend hundreds of dollars on in-game purchases without thinking about it. But you won't pay $5.99 for the app to start with.
Right, so
it's
right.
It's very crazy that the developers hate the freemium model. They hate the advertising. But the publishers love it because they get a lot of money back off of it.
Yeah. In fact, many of the apps that I updated over the last 6 months all had to be hand-okayed because they had changed their permissions.
Yeah.
And almost all of them had in-app purchases now.
Yeah.
Why do I need in-app purchases for my weather app?
So you can buy the weather in another country.
Or buy an umbrella,
I suppose. Buy an umbrella, yeah. Yeah, sure. And there have been quite a few lawsuits. Sort of annoyingly, most of the lawsuits have focused on Apple, even though every store, App Store, has this problem, where kids will buy stuff on the dad's credit card, and instead of the parent saying, I shouldn't have given the kid my password or or whatnot, they'll sue Apple. And there was a big settlement claim a few months ago where if you joined the lawsuit, you got a $5 gift card.
Ooh.
Which apparently was like the average of spending, because we heard stories hit the news when some kid runs up $2,000 in Smurf berries in 20 minutes.
Right.
On the Apple App Store, when you type your password in to buy something, you have a 15-minute grace where you don't have to type the password in again. That used to be 30 minutes, and because of this lawsuits, they lowered it to 15 minutes. But if you had to type your password in every single time you bought something, you'd be really annoyed. Right. And so there's that grace period, but that means that you type your password in. So your kid brings the iPad to you and says, you know, I need some Smurf berries. So you type your password in. The kid's going to find out pretty quick that they can buy anything they want for about 15 minutes, and dad won't notice it until he checks his credit card.
I think there should be a question as you set up any smart device. Do you have children?
Yep.
If the answer is no, it sets it up one way.
Yep.
If the answer is yes, it sets it up a slightly different way.
Yeah, you can turn off in-app purchases so they just don't work, period.
Right.
To prevent your kids from buying stuff like that. But then if you want to buy something, you got to go turn it back on.
Right.
So one thing I really wish that Apple has done, and maybe they'll do a little more. Well, I know why. They don't have multi-user setup on the iPad. They would much prefer you bought a second one for the kid.
Of course. Of course they do.
But one of the Android tablets has a multi-user option.
Yeah, and it's great. I have friends who have it, and they now have a login for their child.
Yep.
And the only apps on there are child apps.
Yep.
So the kid can't suddenly find himself in a news app or in the weather app and buying something from the weather app.
Yep.
So it's really a nice feature. I would love to see Apple invent that.
You have all those parental controls available on iOS, but it's on or off. There's no multiple users. So you turn it on and let your kid use it, and then and we do see that sometimes. You know, the parents get a new one and pass the old one down to the kids. So it's that trickle down economics. We sometimes
call right.
It. Yeah.
All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York.
Well,
welcome,
good
Steve. What's up,
guys? How are you doing?
Great. How are you?
I am well, thank you. A friend of mine, I finally talked him into storing his data on an E drive, not on his operating system drive. One of the questions he asked me is when he uses Office to save his either Excel or Word files or things like that. We changed the default setting, but when you go to save, if you look at the left side of the pop-up, whatever it is, there's a panel that says Save In.
Yep.
And there'll be some icons in there. He wanted to know how to take some icons out and add icons to that panel, and I couldn't find anything. I'm sure I just don't know the name of it. If I knew the name, I could probably find it, but...
Have you tried just dragging a folder into that panel and dragging folders out you don't want?
And it didn't work.
Yeah, I think that's your favorites panel.
Or is it the recents panel?
I don't think it's... It says save in?
Yes. It's just a small... It's basically, it goes to your default... Whatever you set up is your default folder. But there's a panel to the side...
Right, that's the navigation pane.
Okay.
And I know you can play around with it. It's the favorites at the top of that page. And you can turn that on or off. But how you change something to it, I thought you just dragged it in.
You may have to do it on the desktop, not inside the app.
What do you mean, on the desktop, not inside the app?
Open a window on the desktop and change the navigation or favorites pane.
If I still don't know what you mean. I mean, if I go to save a folder or save a file, you get the pop-up and you've got the...
If you're at that pop-up, on that side is that pane, that little side window, that little side column.
Yep.
At the bottom, there should be configure buttons.
I don't remember seeing that, but I don't
What version of Office are you using?
Right, is that?
I'm using 2003. He's using 2007.
You should have them. You should be able to configure the buttons. Then you could be able to show more buttons, show fewer buttons, add or remove buttons, do whatever you want with the buttons.
Well, there should be something at the bottom of the pane.
Yeah.
Authorize it.
Yeah.
All right. I will give that a check out and get back to him. Thank you very much for your data. I hope to see you guys next week.
I hope so. Thanks.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. The path the problem with Windows is knowing what to call things so you can look them up. It's the navigation pane, just like that thing you pull out from the right in Windows 8. It's called the Charms menu. I don't know why. It's not all that charming, quite frankly.
Yeah, that's Outlook only.
Maybe.
That's interesting. So it's the navigation pane is different in each Office program and in each version of each Office program.
Maybe. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour, which means we're less than 23 hours away. Not 23 hours, 166 hours away from our 25th anniversary at Love and Cup. But until then, we'll see you right back here. On the longest running computer show in the known universe, a member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are merely 166 and a half hours away from our 25th anniversary show.
25 years.
I didn't think I could stand you guys for a week, and we've been doing it for 25 years. I'm a saint. A saint, I tell you.
I'm sure we'll talk about some of the early history, but didn't you say you just opened the mics? No advertising, no preparation. You just opened the mics and
really,
said, give
nobody,
us a call.
Nobody, yeah. Including us.
Yeah.
Really. What was going to happen. And I remember talking to Bob Smith, God bless him, about that. And he had prepared mounds of course, Bob, the smartest human being I have ever met in my entire life, had the entire universe of knowledge. Bob was the internet before there was an internet. Mm-hmm. But he had mounds of paper and mounds of notes to himself about things we were going to talk about. We opened the mic and said, we're taking your computer questions. Phones never stopped ringing. The only time the phones don't ring is when, A, there's some big event in Rochester,
yep,
where people are out that day, or which could be, by the way, the fact that the sun is actually out for more than 8 minutes, or B, when there's some sort of physical problem with the phone lines. And then we're tapping and singing and.
Do you remember? This is going back to our very early days, and the phones would act up on us. It wasn't until
I got on the line. Poor Dave would go over and say, "I can run these," and he'd start hitting buttons, and nothing would happen. Nothing would work. Esther is in the booth. Nothing's happening.
Yeah,
nothing's
working.
I'd say, well, let me give it a try, and I'd hit a button, and everything would start to work perfectly.
And we call that the guru proximity factor.
Right,
exactly. And it would happen. It happened not once, but at least three or four times.
Yep.
In our career over there.
Yep, and it made you angry. I remember.
It did, because
you're the hardware guy.
I mean, I've got control even here.
Yes.
And you know, it's like, wait a minute, this is not logical.
Yep.
Because that's my whole way of thinking. Being a programmer and everything else, and you know, working on devices, I know the certain way that they've got to work, and it's just the way they got to be.
Yep.
Because I don't claim to know, and I was talking to this with Kathy, I don't know a lot about software. You know, I know enough about the operating system, but other programs, no.
Right.
I'll fumble around with them. I've got a good understanding. But when it comes to the hardware and what makes them run and everything else and the logic behind the software, I've got a good understanding of that.
Right.
That makes sense to me.
Right.
So.
And in contrast, I don't even want to plug in a mouse. I don't do hardware. I do not do hardware.
Oh, I know. I've seen you sweat.
Oh,
I've been to your over your house.
And yes, you have. Yes, you have. But when I sat down at that board.
Everything?
It cleared up. Everything was fine. It really did. It was so funny.
The whole aura.
You couldn't get a light to come on to those things.
Yeah,
and I would just sit down and go, bing, 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 and it would all work.
Uh-huh.
I don't get it either. I don't get it.
Yeah, no, but that was so much fun.
Yeah, it really was.
And where can they hear more stories like this?
Next week, a mere 166 and a half hours from now, we will be at the Lovin' Cup at Park Point near RIT, the corner of Jefferson, and I think that's John Street. I don't know. I only worked there for 20 years. And so we will be there next Saturday. But until then, the only place you can hear us is here, and you can't see us at all because we're in the studio. Oh, wait, you can see us on the thing. Now, we have to figure out if we can get the camera and everything else working there. People will certainly be able to see us live, but we do not know if people will be able to see us over Ustream or whatever on that day. So, but we're looking forward to it. I hope you are. I personally want to see that place so full.
That'd
busts
be really
out of the
cool.
Rest.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun.
That's my thing, but that's just me. Let me read a news item here. We've sort of already read this one, so I'll leave that one out. The internet, you gotta love this one. You can't call them cable companies anymore. For the first time ever, the number of broadband subscribers with the major U.S. cable companies exceeded the number of cable subscribers. That is to say, the number of people who get their broadband through a cable company exceeded the number of people who get the television or you know, the radio, all those channels. Through the cable subscribers. Among other things, these figures suggest the industry is now misnamed. Evidently, these are broadband companies that offer cable TV on the side. To be sure, the difference is minimal this year. 49,915,000 broadband subscribers versus 49,910,000 cable subscribers. So it's really a difference of only about 5,000 people. But the fact that the number is higher is the first time in history, even assuming a huge overlap in those numbers from customers who have both, the primacy of broadband demonstrates a shift in consumer priorities. Nearly all the major cable companies added broadband subscribers over the past quarter for a total of nearly 380,000 new signups. Cable subscribers don't have to worry about TV as they know cable TV subscribers don't have to worry about TV as they know it going away anytime soon, but cable is on its way to becoming secondary, the nice to have compared to the necessity of having broadband access. Such a transition might suit the cable companies, as they're still called, just fine. Some smart people suggest the cable guys would not be unhappy if most of their business moved over to broadband instead of video, since there are much better margins and almost no competition for broadband. The better margins boil down to the fact that the broadband is purely about access, while cable is about content. The crux of the cable side of the cable business is hatching deals with the makers of sports, news, and entertainment, so there's something to send through the box. And the cost can be steep. ESPN, which is the most pricey by far, tops $5 per subscriber per month. $5 of your cable bill every month goes to watching ESPN, which I very rarely do. Very rarely. I'll watch the World Poker Tour.
Well, I keep wanting them, because Time Warner's running these new commercials now about only buy what you want.
Yeah, right.
I want to call them up and say, I want this channel and this channel, and that's it.
That's right. I only want to buy what I want. With broadband, the cable companies don't have to put anything through those pipes themselves. They just have to be the plumbers. They may or may not like the way Netflix and its more than 36 million U.S. subscribers are eating into their TV businesses, but Netflix and other streaming services are helping drive demand for broadband, a service cable providers can provide without having to serve up any content themselves at all. What this means for the future of TV is still tough to predict. While those figures may suggest the inevitable transition to an internet-dominated future, nearly 50 million cable subscribers don't appear ready to cut the cord just yet. Even with a plethora of on-demand options, people are still watching TV like they used to, which means a business model still based around ads and subscription fees. But that's still a loss of millions of cable subscribers over the past half decade, while the number of broadband subscribers has climbed at a much faster clip. Meanwhile, traditional TV as a format already is being engulfed by the open-endedness of the internet. From mainstream streaming services like Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon Instant Video, to niche sites like Funny or Die, to YouTube celebrities, to name just some of the options that fall under entertainment, the kinds of moving pictures available and the ways to consume them have never been greater. Within this broader spectrum, cable as a concept could become just another niche, one channel among many, as the insatiable internet swallows everything it encounters. So, have you cut the cord yet? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And to that point, it looks like, thank you, green light is coming to my neighborhood. I couldn't possibly be more excited. I could not possibly be more excited.
It's coming to your neighborhood, but it probably won't make it up the street.
Don't you? You shut up. You shut up.
How many other times have you been so close?
I know.
It'll stop at your neighbor's house.
I know. Yeah.
No, right there on the corner. No, it won't even make it up the street.
No, it'll go up the street and just skip his house.
Or on the other side of the street. Sorry. It's too close to Pinnacle Hill. We can't cross the street.
I will move over across the street. I will kick someone out of their own stinking house and move over.
Or you'll be running the cable underground.
Cable, sling it over the trees and come over to my house. One of the interesting things they're finding, by the way, is that people who have high-speed internet in their homes can ask more, get more, and sell their houses faster than people without.
Yeah, because that's become a necessity these days.
So,
if you're thinking of selling your house, put that on your list.
Put that on your list. If you get something like, well, Greenlight is, for those of you who don't know, is a fiber optic, and you can get 100 megabit or for $50 a month, or gigabit for $250 a month, and I had 100 megabit to my desktop when I was at RIT, and I miss it. I truly, truly miss it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Buffalo, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's up?
Hi there. Hey, guys. I made the jump, right? Disconnecting my cable. Going down completely. The problem I had with the cable was every time I'm ready to sit down and watch television, I got 400 channels of nothing I want to watch.
that's why my DVR is always full. The stuff I want to watch.
What's that?
That's why my DVR is always full, because the stuff I want to watch isn't on when I'm sitting there wanting to watch it.
Right.
Yeah, but with Hulu and Netflix, I mean, pretty much you can search out something that you want to see. And at 61 years old, I remember these when they were, you know, at the movie theater.
Yeah. So,
you know, that's my thing, you know. Plus, the cost of cable versus, you know, the $8 a month for, like, Hulu Plus is you know, it's not competitive. I mean,
right.
the Internet. And I wish, see, people my age, I wish I hung around with a younger crowd because I would know more about the ones that stream. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wish. In fact, you should have a little bit of the show where people call in and tell them how clever they are, what they're doing with their computers this week.
That's not a bad idea, you know that? It really isn't. Whether we have people call in or we make it a little section of our website.
Yeah, especially with your anniversary coming up.
Yeah. Time to institute a brand new thing. So maybe we'll just talk to people there and say, you know, what cool thing are you doing with your computer this week?
Yeah.
There's a great idea.
Doesn't thank always you. Have to be a problem when you call in.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, one of the things, now, if you look at, and again, I'm picking on Greenlight just because it's in my head because they're coming to my neighborhood. But if you take a look at any of these broadband places, you'll see that one of the things that they tout is that it's perfect for streaming. And they mention Netflix, Hulu, YouTube, Amazon Prime, Pandora, iTunes, and how you can get super fast. You know, when you've got a house full of people and your wife is on Castleville and your daughter is streaming videos from everywhere, Netflix and Hulu, and you're streaming videos from Netflix and two other people are streaming videos from Hulu and Netflix and YouTube. You know, even that 10 megabits, 20 megabits kind of gets a little tight. But when you have 100 megabit, doesn't matter. Nobody even notices that you're also online. So well, you cut the cord.
Bribery comes in. You have to bribe them to leave the house.
Yeah, what happened to when I was a kid?
Here's $20 for the movies.
Yeah, exactly. If
well,
my mother or
50.
Father, yeah, right. If my mother or father said get out of the house, we got out of the house.
Yep.
That wasn't an option. It was not a suggestion.
Yeah,
that go was, play outside.
Yeah, go play outside. Get out of the house. Don't come in until the streetlights are on. Now you see your kids get out of the house and they look at you like you just spoke in Swahili.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you've cut the cord. And are you happy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What was happening with me was I was always watching, like, Cinemax on demand or HBO on demand.
Right.
Because you go in, even on the pay channels, you sit there and go, I don't want to watch that.
Yep.
I don't want to watch it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You know, it just wasn't, you know, it just always seemed like when I was ready to sit down, it's also, these are shows of somebody of a different age too,
right? Right.
I mean,
right.
I've never I've never seen a Kardashian. I don't know what she looks like. You know, I certainly walk by the magazines at Wegmans and walk by. You know,
right.
And but she's of a different generation than I am.
Right.
You know? It's tough. A lot of the television stuff, it doesn't interest me.
You know, and I have to say, I grew up with television. I spent 60 plus years. No, hold on. We got to take a quick break. Don't leave the line. Stay on the line. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Mike from Buffalo, and you. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we have Mike from Buffalo, New York on the line. And I was saying, Mike, you there?
Yeah, I'm there. Yeah.
I was saying, I'm 63 years old, and I grew up with the television schedule. Tuesday yep. nights at 9 o'clock, you sat down to watch MASH. You know, Sunday nights, you sat down to watch I Dream of Jeannie.
And
whatever,
there were only three channels.
There were three channels. There were four channels. But the point is, I was used to X night at X at Y hour, I sat down to yep. watch television.
The VCR changed all that.
Now, I'm one of those people who binges.
Yeah.
I will sit down and watch Orange is the New Black the whole season. I will sit down and watch House of Cards the whole season. And then and that's more satisfying. You finish an episode and you think, I don't have to wait. The heck with that. I'll just watch the next one.
Yeah. BBC America has been running Doctor Who for 3 days straight now, getting ready for the new episode tonight. They'll catch up on all the old ones you might have missed and remember them again. But yeah, so yeah, the VCR changed all that in the 70s when we could start recording things for when we're not home and then watching them again later when we missed them. And I remember the video rental. So a VCR tape of a movie would be $100 to buy because it was for rental first. So the rental company would buy five of them and rent them five times each before they came out for $20 for end user purchase. So
right.
And now the DVR, we still say tape on the DVR. You can tell someone's age by taping something on the DVR.
Yeah, right. and are you a binger, Mike?
I'm sorry?
Are you a binger? Do you watch an entire season of something all at once?
If it's very, very good. I'll tell you, the last time I did that was, there's a thing called Blinky House on Netflix. And I watched that. It's about the five women who were code breakers during World War II.
Yeah.
I wanted to see that, but I don't have Netflix. And I see, I'm still arguing with myself about this cutting deal. I want to add Netflix and Hulu, but I'm afraid to give up cable yet.
Well, you don't have to give it up. There's no rule.
Well, I know, but then I have to pay more.
See, I want $16 a month.
I want to get everything and pay less.
Yeah.
He wants it all.
Yep. And I'm looking forward to the new. I'm a Marvel Comics geek, and I admit that. And Marvel Comics is bringing and Netflix is bringing four new Marvel Comics series to Netflix. You'll be able to binge watch all of them at once. And I'm excited about that. You know, it's a real change. And yes, there are still TV shows that I watch regularly, like Doctor Who. But, you know, if I can cut down my cable bill and get the same kind of quality, and when you have, you know, 100 megabit to your house, you can get the same kind of quality you get from a cable TV program. Why wouldn't I do that?
Yep,
but I wish you guys would have like a little technology thing with people. That years ago, I used to drive up in a hill on North. I'm calling from Buffalo.
Yeah,
I used to drive up on a hill in above North Boston and listen to you guys on the radio.
Yep.
Now I stream you. You know what I mean? Of course, and I get to listen to the show, and I don't have to get in my I'd have to sit in my car and listen to the show.
Yes, we used to have people who would call in, and of course, I would always say now, and they would say, and I'm calling from my car, and I would say, now you're pulled over, right? And they would say, we're parked on a hill listening to the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and you're absolutely right. It's how we had to do it. Now we can sit in the comfort of our homes, suck it in over the internet, and be happy.
And just one more thing. I'm always amazed at what Steve Ray knows. Like the lady who called up and he gave her the model number or the CR 2032 off the battery.
Off the battery, yeah.
You're amazing at what you can do.
Yes.
Well, sometimes you use enough of them and you remember the number.
You wind up forgetting more than you remember.
Yeah.
Also, he types into Google so fast you wouldn't believe it.
Yeah.
No, it's not. That's just one example. But I mean, across the years, I'm always amazed at what you come up with.
Yeah, Steve is a very knowledgeable guy.
See, I wish I did that well in my classes.
Yeah.
lies the challenge.
I did great in the labs.
Right.
Classroom, especially test, I was never a good test taker.
Yep, I get it. Yeah. I get it.
Yep.
Well, neither was Einstein, from what I understand.
Yep.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, enough of me. Have a good day. I'm hoping to make the reunion.
Hope so. I hope so. Thanks. Thanks. Have fun. Oh, and by the way, during the break, we looked up so far. Right now, the fastest optical carrier you can get is the OC768. It's 38.4 gigabits per second.
And then we wondered about the price. The best price I can find is an OC48 is $150,000 a month. So if you multiply that out, you're about $2 million a month for an OC768.
Well, yeah, but...
And so that's what the ISPs buy to be able to pass that out to their thousands and thousands of customers.
Exactly. All right, back to the phones. And I think we have a repeat of Dennis from Rochester back on the line. Welcome, Dennis. What's up?
Yeah, yes, you do. I'd like to get your views on satellite TV versus... cable TV. I mean, we have Dish and we have DirecTV, and then we have Time Warner in our area. Can you give me your thoughts? Because Time Warner is killing me on the price.
Well, I'll tell you what.
You and me both.
My father-in-law has one of the satellite providers. I don't remember which one he has, honestly. And, you know, I asked him, I say, and he lives out in the middle of nowhere in Brockport, and he...
And that's usually the first thing, is if there is no cable, then you have to get satellite.
Right. And I asked him, you know, do you have trouble when it... Because you hear that, you know, the cable companies will tell you, do you have trouble when it rains? Do you have trouble when it snows? He said, one day, and he's had it for years, one day he had trouble when the snow was so heavy that it actually brought the satellite dish down off his roof.
Well, and some of that now is we used to have...
Okay, that's fair.
We used to have 6 10-foot dishes. Now it's 18 inches. Right. And so there's less weight on it. There's less surface area. But from what I've been reading, too, that generally speaking, they're about the same. Just whatever channels and package you can get.
Right.
The thing that really annoys me is the new user package deals. That you see the advertisements for all the companies, and new users can sign up, and you get internet and phone and everything for $50 a month. Well, I'm not paying that, and when I call them up, I'm not a new user, so I'm not eligible.
Right.
And so we see a lot of people now will switch, and then when they try to switch back, well, you're not a new user either. You're a returning user.
Right.
But one of the things that we have heard some pretty good success with is calling your current provider and threatening to switch or asking how they can lower your bill, and maybe they'll give you one of these new packages.
Yeah, I'm getting heard. So that's all I get is the cable.
Yeah.
TV. And
that's all I get.
It's ridiculous. Yep. Keeps creeping up and creeping up, and half the channels I don't even use.
Phil Dampier on Stop the Cap. I'm gonna see if I can find it to post it. He was able to cut his cable bill in half from almost $200 down to barely $100 a month by going through the social media people for his cable company. Sometimes there's what they call the customer retention specialist. In fact, who was it? Ryan Block from Engadget. He's now at Google. There was a 20-minute phone conversation he posted on the internet trying to cancel his cable company, and they kept saying, no, well, how about we upgrade you to this? How about we upgrade you to that? And no, I want to cancel. And so the customer retention specialist will try to keep you from canceling, but a lot of times there are other people you can talk to get the better deals for the services you want and the channels you want.
Is there a, can you, I'm not sure if you can answer this, is one better than the other in terms of customer service and performance?
Oh, I can't answer that. You would have to find somebody who had both.
Well, everyone hates everyone.
Everybody hates the one you've got. Yeah.
Okay, so you switch thinking it's better, and then eventually you'll hate them too.
All right. Now, Greenlight. Greenlight is only going to part of the city?
Well, they're slowly rolling out. It's, you know, how many hundreds of billions do you have to throw optical fiber everywhere.
$2 million a month, we just found out.
$2 million a month.
Everyone knows them 68.
So they're rolling out slowly, and they're going to various neighborhoods. You go to their website, and it says sign up, and what they're really asking for is, are you interested? Then the more people in a neighborhood who are interested, the closer that neighborhood gets to the top of the list.
And what was your cost for, as far as you know, Nick, for getting the...
It's $50 a month for 100 megabit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dennis. I suspect you know that that sound means we are now a mere 166 hours away from our 25th anniversary show at the Love and Cup at Park Point at RIT. I hope we blow the roof off the place. I'll be there. Steve will be there. Dave will be there. So we're done for another week. Michael will be there.
Michael will be here.
Right. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. But we're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. For Dave Enright, for Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you next week.